Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
Today, we have a special interview for you guys. We got to sit down and talk to Jim and Kelly Thornton from the X-Files Preservation Collection. You may have seen them around on social media. They're the ones with all the awesome props that were donated directly from Chris Carter himself. We had a great conversation with them, and you guys will get to hear it. But first, let's hear the tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay. Tweets of the week. These are in response to our latest top 10 episode, which was all about our top 10 favorite lines from the X-Files. And we got some great responses from folks that listened who chimed in with their favorite lines, which we were thrilled to hear. So we always appreciate that. Kendra said, watching Triangle and realized this is one of my favorite lines. Not sure why I find it so funny, but it cracks me up every time. Byers says, let's take a walk. Scully, okay, where are we going? Frohickey, the walls have ears. Scully, I have ears. Will you tell me what's going on? I had forgotten that bit altogether, Andy, but that is classic. That's gold right there.
It is. You know, anytime Scully gets to interact with the lone gunman is special. And I love, right? And you know what makes that line so great is just the familiarity with which she says it. Yes. I do enjoy that line. I wouldn't necessarily rank it among my favorites, but I love when there are just sort of random esoteric lines that somebody reminds me of. Like me and the wetlands thing. Like nobody cares about that, but like if I say it, you're like, oh yeah, the wetlands thing. That was funny.
I'll never be able to hear that line without thinking of Annie now because I know how much you love it.
I feel as if I've accomplished something in life because
that's
you just
great.
Said that. Yes.
That and dead rat body part. Those are the lines that will forever be associated with you.
Partial rat body part, right?
Yes, thank you.
Amazing. God, there are too many. We're going to need to do another top 10 list of favorite lines.
There are so many. As we'll see from these great tweets, because folks came up with so many great lines as well, that each one I'm like, oh yeah, I wish I could have used that one too.
Yeah, yep.
Yulia said, I love the angsty opening line from Trust No One, and I know you love this, Annie. I think it so powerfully combined the footage from my favorite episodes. Chance meeting your perfect other, your perfect opposite, your protector and endangerer, Chance embarking with this other on the greatest of journeys. I have maybe gone on record in the past as not being a huge fan of this opening, but I know you love it.
You have. Okay. I'm glad you've come around. That's called growth, Jen. I love that. This is one of those rare moments where I'm okay with Carter's purple prose because it's literally them like saying on air, hey, y'all, the shippers won. And that's where I love that. I love that whole monologue. I love that it's the cold open. I love all of the photos that they put in quick succession. And it's so artsy. And that's
and
some
the music
powerful
too, right?
stuff. Yes, the music is Tchaikovsky, who I'm also quite a big fan of. But
Which you included in our top 10 music, one of our top 10 music episodes.
Source music. Yes.
Source music.
Absolutely. I don't want to give Carter all the credit because I have a feeling Frank Spotnitz was definitely whispering in his ear. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You can do this.
Let go, Chris. Let go. You can just do it.
Great.
Yeah.
Great
I still choice. Think it feels weird to me, but I appreciate the artistry of it. And I am okay with it. But I'm glad that others love it as much as they do.
Mm-hmm.
From Emily Page Ballou. Emily says, I was so happy to hear you, Annie, bring up the lost episode, The Constant, because I have always wondered whether that episode title was a tribute to my constant, my touchstone line from Amor Fati. What do you think about that, Annie? Any theories on that, being the lost fan here?
Yeah, it's a good question. It very well might be, not to name drop, but I do somewhat know Damon Lindelof. Personally,
Very nice.
Maybe I should reach out and ask him if that was
maybe
a direct reference, because it could very well be. I know that some of those writers were fans of X-Files, and I know that Lost was very derivative of the X-Files. I don't mean that in a negative way, because so many shows were derived from the X-Files.
Absolutely.
But yeah, The Constant is... I'll say it again. It's one of the best hours of television. It really is, Jen. And I know you're not a Lost fan, but maybe someday you will be. Maybe someday.
Anything's possible. Mm-hmm. Emily continues, for my number one, Any's Choice is way up there, but I think I have to go with Jeremiah Smith from Talitha Kumi. You can't kill their love, which is what makes them who they are. That's a great line, Emily.
Yeah, and very, very, you know, that's a deep cut.
That's a deep cut, and I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about Talitha Kumi in the weeks to come as part of our mythology series, and that very line may come up. So thanks for that, Emily. And Jesse writes to us, I was surprised that Jen didn't include the line, get up, you're not shot, from How the Ghost Stole Christmas. Awesome podcast once again. Thank you, Jesse. That one, not surprisingly, came really close to making my list. In the end, the only reason it didn't make it onto mine is because I feel like I've talked about it quite a lot already. And it's kind of a personal line for me. It's very personal in terms of why I love it. Although I think it applies. I think a lot of people have kind of sort of they kind of feel it. They kind of feel that kind of meaning from it, just like I do. That kind of sense of don't let your imagination control you. Just get up. You're not shot. Believe it. And so I think a lot of people have kind of, it speaks to them the way it speaks to me. If I was to get an X-Files quote as a tattoo, that would for sure be it. Because honestly, I just need to be reminded of it constantly. Because I read that from Jesse and I was like, oh yeah, I love that. And then I was oh yeah, I needed to remember that again, because it's just like I'm always letting myself get away from myself. And so just got to get my brain back under control sometimes and say, come on, you're not shot. And so thanks for that, Jesse, because sometimes I need to be reminded of that line, obviously. And it's a great one for me. So thanks for reminding me of it. Jesse also says, it's more about the way David delivers the line, but it's one of my faves. When Mulder says, Dana, he laughs. He never even knew your first name. Scully says, you're going to interrupt me or what? And Mulder says, no, go ahead, Dana.
Yeah.
Of course, that's from Bad Blood.
Love it. Love it.
I've said more than once that I'm not a huge fan of Bad Blood, but I do really like that exchange. I do enjoy a lot.
You know, it's funny. I mean, I'm realizing as I'm thinking about it, just off the top of my head, is like, I don't think any of my favorite lines that I picked are from like my top five episodes.
Right.
Which is very, well, that's not true because my Paper Hearts one is on there. But right. There are so many. There are so many great
ones. There are
ones.
So many.
And I think that you're right when you mentioned that, like, you know, maybe the reason you didn't bring up that How the Ghost Stole Christmas one is because we've talked about it before. And I feel like a lot of the time I sometimes I'm like, I feel like we've already talked about that. So I'll leave it off. Mm. Like, it's just a thing that I'll do occasionally from time to time. It is kind of amazing how many, I think, to go to your point or Jesse's point about that Dana line, like from Bad Blood, there are so many great lines from Bad Blood, and I didn't pick any. Because, like I said, we've talked about it so much, so I just didn't.
But you know, we could practically use that whole script as favorite lines. You could find probably 30 without even trying.
Yeah. And you already know what my number one would be.
Would it be something to do with a certain kind of wetland?
It would be.
Mine came out sounding a little sort of like Celtic / German a little bit.
I loved it though. I loved your attempt. Every time I think about that line, I laugh. It's so funny. Oh my God. All right.
It's a good one. But yeah, you're right though. I mean, a lot of stuff we have talked about before, and it's fun with a show like this to be able to talk about lines in episodes that we may not talk about again, or lines, the very specific lines that we may not have a chance to talk about again. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to sort of pick and choose some fairly obscure ones, or ones that we don't talk about as often. And it was fun to be able to do that. And now it's fun to hear other people's favorite lines too, because I mean, there's not a line I don't love. So that's awesome. Pekka said, got goosebumps of Annie's number one. Would you like to remind us, Annie, what your number one was?
Yes. My number one was, well, it's from Paper Hearts and Aubrey. It was brought back twice. It was the dreams are answers to questions you haven't thought to ask. I think I have that somewhat right. I feel like
dreams are answers to a question
that you haven't thought to
ask yet. Something like that.
I don't know it exactly because it's. I think it's said two different ways. I could be wrong. But everyone who hears me probably knows what I'm referring to.
That's the gist. We got the gist.
Yep.
Pekka goes on to say, I would have selected the same. In the 90s, young me wondered about dreams and what they meant. Do they tell me about my future, perhaps? Then Mulder, my idol, kind of answered me on the X-Files, so it really spoke to me back then. Oh, that's great. That's an awesome story, Pekka. There is something powerful about sometimes you can get like a personal kind of response and a personal sort of connection with something on the X-Files. If it's a show that you're already emotionally connected to, and then there's a line that sort of connects you personally, like the way I do with that line from the When the Ghost Stole Christmas, it's a kind of an amazing thing, and it really can really stick with you, mm-hmm. and it can like be quite meaningful. And Pekka obviously remembers that experience from back in the day, so I can see how that would sort of be an important sort of moment, and I get it. A Monica File fan, Monica says, she's quoting Scully from Within. I will go on record to say this, that I have seen things that I cannot explain. I have observed phenomena that I cannot deny. And that as a scientist and a serious person, it is a badge of honor not to dismiss these things because someone thinks they're BS. That's great, isn't it, Annie? I love that.
Oh, God,
that's a great little speech from Scully.
Yeah. I mean, Scully got so much character evolution in season 8.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that people overlook, that Scully was just, she had to be, but MVP, man, of season 8. And the fact that was the first episode of season 8 and she is just so defensive, not defensive in a bad way, but just defensive of Mulder and of his methods in the face of a new character that we don't know and we don't trust. And that's a great line. Love it.
Yeah. It's great writing. Just reading it now. It's great, of course, when Julian delivers it, and it's great to read. But saying it out loud reminds me how great a writer. I'm guessing that it was either Chris Carter or Frank that wrote that line.
Yeah.
It reads really well. There's just the rhythm to it is really just beautifully done. And it's a great little speech and great great moment from Within. So thanks for that, Monica, to remind us about the awesomeness that is season 8.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy G has a couple of faves from X-Cops. I don't think it's live television, Scully. She just said beep.
Yeah. Oh, God. That one came very, very close. Do you want to hear some really funny Annie trivia?
Yes.
Do you remember, I'm sure you do, Jen.
Like
20 years ago when computers and AOL and all of that stuff was it was just kind of starting to be a big thing. And you could turn your computer off and you could set the noise to be a specific.
Oh, yeah.
That used to be my shutdown noise. It would be, I would shut down my computer and it would be, I don't think it's live television, Scully. She just said, beep. Maybe 20 years is exaggerating, but it was right around the turn of the century. Wow. I feel old.
That was 21 years ago.
Yes, but that was a fantastic line. Great,
that
great
is a
choice,
great line.
Kathy.
That one, I was thinking of a couple of different lines from X-Cops. I honestly forgot about that one, and I'm kind of kicking myself a little bit now, so I'm really glad that you mentioned it, Kathy.
There were so many good ones in X-Cops, though.
So, X-Cop is another one that we could have had a top 10 easily each
from
just that episode.
Steve and could have had their own top 10 list.
They could, really. Oh, my gosh. Don't even get me started. Kathy has a couple of other great favorite lines from Requiem. I won't let you go alone. Oh, yeah. Angstastic. I love that line, too.
Mm-hmm.
From Folie à Deux, Scully, you have to believe me. No one else on this damn planet does or ever will. You're my one in 5 billion. That's a classic line,
you're my one in 5 billion.
Yeah.
It was almost too classic. I probably left it off my list to a fault because it's just one of those things he says that you're just like, why are you saying this stuff and you're not saying other things? It's so weird.
It's great.
It's awesome.
A great line. And
awesome.
We talked about Folie à Deux. We had a whole episode about it recently, so we had a chance to discuss that then. And I'm sorry, but your cat is like, what's happening right now?
Do you see this?
Is that her tail?
That is her tail.
Is that her tail or her paw?
Her butt is in my face, and her tail is flapping in my in the breeze.
What is that?
Oh my God, she's nuts. I'm sorry. She is like the third co-host.
And you have like an image in your background, and so your cat just kind of suddenly appeared out of nowhere, and it was just kind of a strange turn of events. Everyone knows what I'm talking about because we've all been on Zoom and everything these days. So sometimes odd things just happen.
Yeah, they do.
Hi, Leia.
She's not showing up, but she is here and she is loud and clear. Oh my God.
Sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm sorry that Leia's interrupting.
Kathy also reminds us from Redux 2, one of my favorite lines, if I can save you, let me. Another fantastic line.
Mm-hmm.
That one came really close to making my list as well. So thanks, Kathy, for mentioning that one. Oof, gets me every time. Kathy also added from Founder's Mutation, you're never just anything to me, Scully. That's a great one,
too. Yeah, you know, it was funny because we were giving season 10 some shit about not having anything. And the second I said it, I was like, that's not true because there's that you're not just anything to me, Scully line that is probably maybe the best line in season 10. One of the best lines in season 10.
It's great.
It's fantastic.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful line. And Sarah also reminded us from EBE, Scully, you are the only one I trust. I love that. Really love that line, too. I was tempted to use that. I wound up using another one from EBE.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you, Sarah, for mentioning that one. And from Laura. Laura says, this is a classic one from Fight the Future. Pick up the phone and make it happen.
Yes.
Yeah, that one was, that's a definite favorite line. That was one of my favorite Scully lines.
That was your number one Scully moment.
That was my number one Scully moment, wasn't
which,
it? Yes.
Very well deserved, but I think for that reason, maybe didn't need to make it onto this list. So
yeah, that's why, that's the only reason it wasn't on this one, because I had made a great big deal about it already. So I'm very glad that Laura mentioned it. So we got to say it again, just pick up the phone and make it happen.
Love it.
I love that. That's one of those ones that, like, I try to use it in daily life any chance that I get. Not that I'd actually go so far as to say it out loud, but I think it in my head sometimes when I'm just waiting for someone to do something. I just think, just pick up the phone and make it happen.
I constantly want to quote X-Files things, like, around the house, but my husband does not share my love of the show, and so he would probably just look at me with a blank stare.
Yeah,
he's very, very indulgent. But would not quite understand my references. So
I sometimes will use X-File references knowing that my husband will not know it. And that's okay. I'll just keep on doing it. I'll do it at work, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I work in an office. So the number of times I get to use the phrase lots and lots of files, quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, okay. But I just say it.
It's a good one.
Any chance I get. From Most Unwanted FBI, Mulder up a tree. Hey, Scully, is this demonstration of boyish agility turning you on at all?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Is that schizogyny?
Schizogyny, a really good line in an otherwise terrible episode, in my opinion.
It's just like that, you know,
partial rat body part. Oh, look at us.
You love so much.
Yep.
From what episode? I've already forgotten what episode
that's from. Teso dos Bichos.
Right.
That's the cat episode. Like, good, you can't hate it. Episode. You can't hate it because it has that amazing line. Like,
no, I mean, it's every episode has
something worthwhile. Yeah.
even if it's just a line, something to redeem it a little bit. Isidub says, there's a line that is stuck in my head from the first time I've heard it. Not back in the day. I've discovered the X-Files during the revival. Hey, that's cool. It's, her name is Bambi?
Twice. Yes.
The meaning of the short line, but especially the way Jillian delivers it, which is so funny. That is classic, right? From War of the Cockrophages, I do believe.
Yes. And I think, I don't remember if we mentioned this on the podcast before, but that was actually a decision made in editing to have her say it twice.
Oh.
Because I think in the script, she only says it once. And I think that they thought both of those takes were so funny and like one right after the other that they decided to have her say it twice, I think, in post. Anyone, if you know this, correct me if I'm wrong, but I swear to God, I think that's the truth. I think that's what happened. Yeah, that like Jillian just did several different takes and they couldn't choose. They were like, these are all so funny. We have to do twice.
I mean, it's like us trying to do our top 10 list. We can't pick. We're going to use them both.
Yep.
So I totally understand that. I mean, they were both worth it. And somehow it's one of those things that it gets funnier the more times she says it. She could have said it 10 times and I would have laughed even harder on the 10th time, probably.
Exactly. Yep.
It was perfection. And going off on another one of our podcast episodes, Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo recently listened to our podcast episode about guest actors and guest characters, and agreed with Annie that Breaking Bad is the best TV series ever. Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo says, I love The X-Files, obviously, but Broken Bad is such an intricate, perfectly interwoven story from start to finish. It is mind-blowing how good it is. Has Jen watched it? Yes, indeed. During the podcast, I did say I was going to, and I still am. It's on my list.
But you have not yet?
I have not yet.
Oh, Jen.
I almost started it last week, a couple weeks ago. But then I started on Killing Eve instead, which I think is awesome. And so I'm very into that at the moment. But once I finish that, maybe it's the time.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's time for me and Breaking Bad.
When it does.
I really want to watch it.
Look, okay. When it does occur, I expect frequent texts from you, Jen. I don't want to like be, you know, appear like I'm stepping out on the X-Files or having some sort of fling or being adulterous, but it's true.
It's okay, it's true. It's Gilligan, so
Breaking
it's okay.
Bad is, it's the greatest television show of all time. I know, oh my God, I'm getting fired right now by everyone listening.
But I'm going to fire you.
Here's the thing. The X-Files, while closer to my heart, and it's my favorite television show, I think most people can agree had it sort of lulls. Sure. And there were points that it wasn't perfect. Breaking Bad was perfect from start to finish. And it's very rare to say that about a television show.
That's amazing.
It went off on a high note. It left at a time that it needed to. And Vince has gone on record to say that he learned from the X-Files, that he didn't want to sort of make the same mistakes. And he didn't. And yeah, no, Breaking Bad is
all right.
Fantastic.
Very nice. I mean, Breaking Bad is a great example when you're comparing it with the X-Files of the advantages of having limited run seasons.
Yes.
Compared to, you know, the network shows that have been, you know, 20 to 25 episodes a season.
Yeah.
And so there's an advantage to having a more limited number and, you know, a little bit more creative control perhaps from Vince as well.
Absolutely. I mean, and to Chris Carter's credit, this is not necessarily wasn't his decision to keep this show going. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was the network's decision, and he could have stepped away, but he did not want to do that and give control to someone else of the show, which I mean, I completely respect. So it's like if it were up to him, it probably would have ended at season 7, I would think. I think that's not what the network wanted, and sometimes you just have to sort of bow to the whim of the network.
Yeah.
And luckily in sort of nowadays time and with streaming and all these different sort of platforms, there's a lot more flexibility with that, and people are allowed to sort of let the creative aspect of the show drive when it ends. And that was just not the case with the X-Files, which I think it gets a lot of crap for, but I mean, they did what they could. They did everything they could, and I can't fault them for that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great the way shows now, especially the streaming shows, the seasons can be shorter, and they can drop the seasons pretty much when they want to. They don't have to be on this every September schedule, you know, September to May every year doing these 20 to 25 episodes.
That's true. They can have
a little bit more time between seasons if they want to.
Or a
if
lot.
If they need that time
or
not. And that's another great advantage. And wouldn't it be interesting as a little sort of thought experiment to think about what would the X-Files be if it was like a Netflix show now with like 13 episodes a season and it only had like 3 or 4 seasons, something like that. Wouldn't that be interesting how different it would be if that was the world we were living in back in 1993?
Yeah, I mean, and I can't imagine what that would have been like in 1993, but I mean, I can see with what they did with the revival that it was very possible and very, it worked for that show. It worked.
Absolutely.
You know, they were able to do a 6-episode season and a 10-episode season, and both were pretty concise and told the story they wanted to tell, and probably in a better way than a 22-episode season. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I don't know, to see what television shows do moving forward, if this is just going to be the way it is forever. Which would be wouldn't be a bad thing, you know? Because I think the quality of television has gone up. I really do.
Totally. We're in a golden age.
We are. Yeah.
It's always been a more of an American thing, too, of course, to have these long seasons.
Right.
Whereas, you know, our UK listeners would know that this has been the norm forever on UK television, to have seasons that are 3, 4, 8, 10, maybe 12 episodes, series, as they would be called.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to drop them once every couple of years in many cases. So it's always been kind of an American thing to kind of have these very regular TV seasons and to just stuff them full of episodes. So it's nice to sort of see some other options out there now. And it's and we have to sort of remember that in terms of comparing. It's apples and oranges in a lot of ways comparing TV today with TV from the 90s just because of those different styles and different kinds of pressures that the series have been under. But I mean, am I going to complain that we have 218 episodes of The X-Files to choose from? No, I am not. So no. I'm glad we have as many as we do. Of course, yes, there's some ups and downs. But you know what? Even the ones that are downs, people still there's people that still love those episodes. There's episodes that probably think and probably would have been cut that I love. So I'm glad that they didn't cut them. So
yeah,
I'm happy to have every last episode that we have. And happy to hear everyone's take on all their favorite lines and our other podcast episodes. So thrilled to hear from our listeners at all times. Anytime you want to have a little chat with us, let us know your feedback. We love to hear from you. We're at XFD Podcast on Twitter, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
Well, thanks you guys for doing this.
Thanks for the offer.
Yeah, we're excited to talk to you because we obviously, and along with all of the fandom, have seen your guys' posts about all of the amazing props and things that you have gotten directly from Chris Carter. And we think that's fabulous. And we're going to get to that. But first, we would like to get to know you guys a little bit more. So tell us about yourselves and how you came to fall in love with the X-Files.
Back in the day, before this goes way back, and yes, this dates my age. back in the day, before the X-Files came out, I was just a huge horror fan, you know, old school horror. I got married at a really, really young age, and I had two sons, they were really little, and I was living a crazy, crazy wildlife while having two kids.
Ooh.
You know, and I was I stated before I was a complete alcoholic and I was a complete heavy drug user, and I was fighting a lot of demons. You know, I had two small sons. The marriage I was in was not good at all. It was toxic, worse than the drugs. The show came on, the pilot episode, and it reminded me of, you know, back in the day, it reminded me of Kolchak because I was a little kid and I used to watch that show when I was growing up, and it kind of brought me back, you know, and I was like, all right, well, this is a really cool show. So, you know, I stayed and watched it. I didn't go out and didn't do anything. I was with my two kids, and, then the show, you know, it a couple more episodes, you know, and I was like, okay, this is good. You know, it kind of grounded me a little bit, you know.
Yeah. One night away from the partying.
Yeah.
Friday nights.
And, you know, and then I decided, you know, I didn't decide. It just, you know, it just happened. I was slowly trying to clean myself up a little bit, you know, for myself and my two sons. And I just was watching the show, and I was it just brought me back so much that I was hooked hard. I mean, hardcore. And then I was like, wow, this is great. You know, and I was looking for any kind of, like, you know, kind of commercial merchandise or anything, but way back in the day, there was nothing out.
Yeah.
You know, so I was with my sister one day. We were at a mall, you know, when there used to be malls and happening, you know, and I saw this binder of showcase cards, saw that, and I instantly freaked out. got the binder of cards, you know, 72 set cards. And I thought, holy cow, I own a piece of the show, you know, lo and behold, they're just cards, you know, and it just took off from there. I mean, it took off. And then, you know, they were on a TV guide. I didn't buy one. I bought 20, you know, that's basically how it took off. You know,
that's awesome. Well, Kelly, we're going to get to you in a second, but I have one more question for you, Jim. Are you a collector by nature, or was this the beginning of it?
This was the beginning of it.
Okay.
You know, this was it. It started with like a shoebox, you know, a shoebox full of, you know, just little stuff, cards and, you know, a couple TV guides, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well over 20 years ago. And then it just grew, you know, and I stopped, you know, I slowly started, you know, stopped the drinking and stopped doing the drugs slowly. You know, I was there with my kids and it transformed my life to what I am now.
Yeah, I was going to say, it almost seems like you swapped one addiction for another, more healthier one.
This is more healthier, but yeah. I got to tell you, this is a hell of a lot more expensive.
Yeah, yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah, extremely.
Well, what about you, Kelly? How did you start off liking the X-Files, falling in love with the X-Files?
Well, I fast forward till I meet him after, and he's the one that introduced me to the X-Files. So, mm-hmm. You know, because back then when the show was on the air, I was living my life and I had kids and that was my whole focus, my kids. So, you know, nothing was on the TV that I was watching. It was all Barney and, you know,
yeah.
So I kind of missed the X-Files. And then he introduced me to the X-Files.
Do you remember your first episode?
I don't remember my first episode.
Because
mm-hmm. you didn't introduce it to me in order. It was all just like.
Yeah.
It was all just.
Yeah.
Would it have been midway through the run? Like, do you remember like an approximate season or anything like that?
Well, I can't remember the season, but I know for a fact it was just a Monster of the Week episode that I showed her.
Yeah.
You know, and we've got similar tastes. She likes horror and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Similar tastes, you know.
Obviously.
So, you know.
Right. So then, you know, I encouraged the collecting and then, you know, he was seeing props and stuff and saying, I wish I could have something like that. And I said to him, you can. It's all about connections.
Yeah.
Just make the connections and you'll get. And that was all it took.
Yeah. Well, speaking of connections, I mean, I think everybody wants to know, how did you guys manage to get hooked up with the man behind the show, Chris Carter? And he clearly has entrusted you guys with a lot of amazing stuff. So how did that all come about?
We'll go back a little bit.
In this whole collecting thing, your reputation is key, because mm-hmm. people aren't going to deal with you if they can't trust you. Like, one of the reasons why we don't disclose where we get things from is because some people specifically request us not to reveal that.
Right.
And it's easier for us to never reveal it. That way we don't mess up and accidentally reveal somebody who we promised we wouldn't, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing, I can't state that enough. One thing is our reputation. Where we get the stuff, you know,
to trust us.
They have to trust. Our reputation is the most important thing to them. And our reputation to the X-Files fans is another most important thing. You know, we want to do everything justice and do it right. You know, I think that
because we were so concentrated on our reputation, making sure people knew we never sell, you know, everything's legit. We're not going to put up a repo without, if we ever did, we would tell you that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was really important for Chris Carter to trust us. Mm-hmm. And he said to us in our interview, if you watch our interview, mm-hmm. that's why he donated to us, because he knows that we're not going to go and just sell it to make a profit, that we're going to give it a home. How he got word of us, I think, is also...
It goes that... That's a multi-person
right.
thing.
Right.
That was how he got word from us was other X-File fans.
Yeah, all of you, everybody out
Frank
there.
Frank Spodnitz. Mm-hmm. You know, because of course you were aware, you know, X-Fest, you know, right. And X-Fest right. 2. We took the truck and we went from New York State and we drove to Chicago, you know, and all the fans saw it. Frank Spotnitz saw it. You know, the celebrities saw it, mm-hmm. you know, it, the word of mouth, you know, it
the
got X-Files around.
News. Definitely.
Yeah. X-File News, we owe them a tremendous amount. They've been, you know, totally supportive of us.
Definitely made at least Frank Spotnitz aware of us.
Yes.
I would imagine would be one way Chris probably heard about us.
So did you guys just get a call or a letter from Chris?
Well, first, if you can share. First, it was Benjamin Van Allen. You know. Mm-hmm. The writer for the episode Familiar, it was him.
Yeah, I opened the email and there's an email from Benjamin Van Allen telling us that Frank Spotnitz wanted to get a hold of us.
Wow.
So.
And then, you know, and you know, that Chris, you know, wanted to donate some stuff.
So first Frank donated some stuff to us.
Yes.
Okay.
And then fast forward a couple more months and I open that email. I'm at work, my 9-to-5 job, and I open our email and there's the email from Chris Carter.
Wow.
And I legitimately had to get up and walk outside and call Jim because I was shaking. I was just so excited.
Yeah. Wow. You know, and the only time she calls me at work, because, you know, I'm at my job, she's at her job, is if it's an emergency.
Oh, this qualifies.
You know? And I thought, you know, when you think emergency, you're thinking something bad's happened, you know? And that's when she told me. And
I'm like, my voice is all shaky. I'm like, honey, so you know he really thought something terrible had happened. And I'm like, Chris Carter.
Yeah, because Chris Carter is, to me, he's the guy, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean,
I call him the creator.
He is the creator, you know? He's everything to me, you know? Because, you know, I'll admit it, you know? He helped put my life back on track, whether he knows it or not, you know? Because of his work, his show, you know? So when she told me that... I'll tell you, boy, I had the biggest girly scream. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I was shaking. It was like, you know, the God had spoken to me, you know, and I was just so overwhelmed.
Gosh, I imagine so. So that's just amazing to me. Obviously, he's been keeping and storing all of this stuff, and it's almost like he has wanted somebody to be able to display it in the way that you guys are planning to do it. Like, was the museum idea already in your minds when he reached out to you? Or was that sort of like, okay, we have too much stuff now that we know what to do with and we need to do something with it?
No, the museum was already being planned. Mm-hmm. It was already being planned.
Yeah. I mean, the museum idea started.
That's basically, really, that museum started at X-Fest.
Probably before that.
Before that, I thought about it, and I don't like to use the word museum because it, you know, I mean, I love museums. Museums are great. This is more than a museum. It's like, it's going to be like an experience. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it and thought about it. And
I had to convince him it was a good idea, that his idea was a good idea.
Like, a lot of people had to convince me to do this, you know, because it is a huge undertaking. It's very risky.
Yeah.
You know, and the stuff that's involved in doing it is just, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't see the behind the scenes stuff of right. what's involved to build this thing. You know, the time,
right.
the money is insane, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of people, her definitely, Kelly definitely, she had to convince me over and over, do it. And a lot of the X-File fans said, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys received a lot of support from the fandom to get it going financially, as I recall, which was...
Yeah, that was when we did that campaign, the Indiegogo campaign, that was to help, you know, fund... some restoration stuff and to, you know, help store some of the stuff because we got such a mass amount of it, mm-hmm. you know,
That was right before all the, you know, world went crazy. Yeah. And all that.
Yeah.
We were like so close to signing a lease on a rental
building.
Right. And then everything got shut down. So yeah. It's kind of like a blessing that it happened before we signed the lease. Because could you imagine? We
yeah.
Would be paying rent and not yeah. be able to.
That would have been really bad timing. Yeah. You couldn't. I mean, nobody could have gone.
Yeah.
That would have been. So yeah, I guess, and then you in the meantime, at least you've been probably having time to catalog everything and go through it and try and get a better idea of how much space you need. Do you know how much space you're going to have when you finally have everything?
A lot.
It's always changing also because...
Right. We're going to be needing, thousands of square feet, you know, a lot of zeros on the end of that, you know, like we talked before, when the world kind of shut down and everything, believe it or not, we talked about it. And it was like a blessing in disguise for us because we reevaluated how we wanted to do it.
Right.
Instead of like renting a facility, we're buying our own.
Yeah.
You know, so it's ours, you know, and it always has a home.
Right. Yeah. And that way, you know, even if, God forbid everything gets shut down again. Mm. You know, I'm paying a mortgage maybe, but I'm not paying rent for something I can't use.
And then you don't have to transport everything all over again. And that's all these different costs and stuff that you wouldn't want to have to risk damaging things or.
Yeah. Every time you move a prop, some of the bigger props, you're, you know, it's risky.
Yeah.
It's a pod. Moving the pod is.
Yeah. That Fight the Future pod. I saw that on one of your YouTube videos. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, that's big, it's heavy, and it's really delicate.
Yeah, it is. And it's like it goes all the way around. So like just when you grip it, you're like you could damage it, but, you know, it's like
I mean, what people don't see in the pod itself is underneath there's steel beams.
Yeah.
You know, that helped support the pod, and there's steel plating at the bottom with metal tubing, you know, where they pumped all the, you know, the smoke and stuff through it,
right?
You know, so, and there's some restoration work that needs to be done on that, you know, because when you watch the movie again, you know, and you look at the pod, you're gonna see in the front and on the sides, it looks like clamps, you know, with handles on it,
right?
The handles, the clamps are real, they're metal, but the handles are all foam.
Right.
Oh.
They're all foam, but they're made to look like it's metal.
And you have to be careful what you touch because you're not really sure what's graspable and what's going to break off. And like, you're going to be like Mulder and touching that skeleton and then like, oops, oh, I just broke off his tail. You brought up restoration. I remembered seeing on your feed there was like something that just comes to mind was like a canister of like Fight the Future film and or something. And you guys were discussing about maybe looking into trying to restoring it, but being like afraid of opening it and exposing it to light, which is obviously a great concern. Like, how do you guys, what's an example of something that you had to do some restoration on? And what was that process like?
Well, right now one process we're doing, we haven't done it yet, is Chris Carter. The first thing he donated was, I never can get the name,
the Mammalian Corpse, aka Ray Soames.
Yeah, that was in the coffin, you know. That one
needs a lot of work.
That one needs a tremendous amount of work, you know. Yeah.
Enough work that it needs a professional person.
Right, we have a professional lined up, you know. I mean, you can name his name.
It's Tom Spina. He is a professional restorer, but he's booked, cool. So
right,
he's been booked, everything's behind, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The price tag on that, just to, you know, hopefully to get him back to
preserve him
just on that prop alone is ballpark, they gave an estimate of $3,000 to $6,000.
Oh my goodness. That's
You know, and we have a few other props here that need a little bit of, you know, restore, you know, if it's foam cast props, you know, they start to deteriorate and crumble.
Yeah.
you know.
Is this this Tom, I'm sorry, I didn't catch his last name. Yeah, is he a move like specific for movie and television props, or like are there specific restorers for that, or is it just like he works for museums and this is just his job, what he does?
No, he's got it, you know, he's got his own, Tom Spina Designs, he's got his own business, you know, Los Angeles and New York City,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he does restore work for television, for movies, and he does, wow. you know, consignments, people.
Right.
You know, that's what he does, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so expensive, but when you're doing something like this, you want the best.
You do want the yeah. best. You have to be so careful.
Yeah. yeah. And some of these props must be quite old. I mean, when I think about, like you were saying, about how they're just kind of disintegrating some of them must be like, you know, over 25 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Just like, you know, Ray Soames, you know, I mean, in the interview, Chris said that, you know, when they were done shooting the pilot episode, he went into the garbage can and dug them out of the garbage can.
You know? I bet those pilot
Chris Carter digging in the garbage.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's funny because you think about it, like at the time, it wouldn't have been looked at as something that was worth saving. But you never know. And I mean, now you look back and be like, well, thank you. Thanks for going dumpster diving, Chris, because otherwise exactly. we wouldn't have it.
Yeah. It seems like Chris was a bit of a collector too, because he accumulated all these things. I'm not sure if all showrunners would do that. So he must have really felt the drive to collect these things. And that's what makes him a perfect match for you guys.
Yeah, and I also think that he loved his show so much, mm-hmm. you know.
It was his baby. You can tell by the care he took, cataloging everything and packing it and, you know, dumpster diving.
Yeah, we saw photos of inside his storage unit and the care he took to catalog and to store everything was absolutely mind-blowing, you know.
Yeah. Was there anything he would not part with? I'm curious if there's anything he kept that he's like, no, you can't have this.
If there is, he didn't tell us.
He didn't tell us. You know, he didn't tell us. See, the first process was, you know, when he reached out to us and said that he wanted to, you know, donate, you had to, you know, do all the, you know, you had to line up the shipping
and stuff.
You know, mm-hmm. we had to get the shipping squared away, which was, you know, basically one of those metal pod containers.
Yeah, it's,
you know?
It's harder than you think to. They want to, like, those people want to go on site and they want to give you, they won't give you an estimate unless they can see the stuff themselves. And I'm like, you can't see the stuff. So I ended up going with one of those pod things. And even that's hard to schedule because I'm on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And they want me to meet them there and stuff. And what am I going to say to Chris Carter? Chris, can you meet the mover? No, I'm like,
I
can't ask Chris to meet the movers.
Right. So,
you
know, like we pay an astronomical amount for the shipping, and it's like, then it's, you just put out all this money and it's like, in California, are they going to deliver this pod unit? You know, and we're just so worried.
And
you know?
They were late actually. Cause Chris was like, I'll be there. Right. So he's going to be there and wait for the pod, the moving pod, not the alien pod. And they were late and he had to go. You know, he's a busy man.
Oh my God.
And so he's like, I'm just going to leave instructions. Like he put up, I don't know exactly how he did it, but he somewhere taped up a poster board or something that said, put it here, you know, so they would know where to put it and left. And then we're just like,
right. And then
waiting till the next day or whenever Chris finally got there to make sure it was delivered properly.
And then you know, whatever he wanted to donate, you know, because this was a mystery to us what was inside it.
We had no idea how much was going to, you know.
Right. And then Chris just, he did his part of it and his end that he wanted to donate. And he just loaded it all up from floor to almost ceiling of inside this pod. You know, and then it got picked up, and then, you know, it's, you know, all this container full of, you know, X-File history is on top of this flatbed truck going across the country.
And you just pray that it gets here.
Yeah, you pray it gets here, you know, and then we posted the video when it was being dropped off, you know.
Right. I remember seeing that, like, all these just trucks, like, completely, and you guys were probably like, what next? Like, what is it? How much more is coming? Like, it just keeps coming. This seems
and then when we opened it up, you know, because we had no clue.
Mm-hmm. I'm expecting like 5 or 6 boxes, maybe.
I'm not going to question nothing. No. He wanted to donate stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Chris, thank you so much. I appreciate everything and I'm going to cherish it. You know, I'm not going to question nothing. Whatever you want to donate, I really don't care.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll take it.
And we opened it up and it was just
unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. The boxes, it didn't stop.
And then you're going through boxes and you think, you know, this is just ordinary stuff. It's cool, but just nothing. And then all of a sudden there's the implant, or there's this.
You're in the middle. I can't imagine what a great day that must have been for you guys, just to like parse through every little thing and be like, oh my God, we have this now. Oh my God, we have this now. It also kind of tickles me to imagine Chris Carter like in his storage unit just being like, well, guess it's time for spring cleaning. Let's clear it all on out. Because like, what a huge decision for him to make, and to make it now. Like, it, in a weird way, it feels kind of a sad way. It feels very final. Like, it feels like, okay, it's time. And I mean, even maybe he now has accepted that maybe the X-Files is over, but it's good because...
He has not accepted that. I think it was just that he'd finally found a place he felt safe.
Yeah.
I can add to that. And his wife. His wife said, Chris, you know, come on now. You know, you've got so much stuff. That's basically what he was saying.
And nobody gets to see it.
I think he just wanted to donate it somewhere where it wasn't going to get torn apart and sold and dissected and all that. And he heard of us, of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And he was tickled pink because, you know, we do not sell.
Right.
That he told us was exactly why he chose to donate it to us, because he knows it's gonna stay here and have a home and
get
shared with everybody. And
if you guys each had to pick your favorite prop that Chris donated, what would it be?
Chris donated. Well,
mine's easy.
Mine's the implant that was like blew my mind, because we watched that pilot
a billion times.
And every time I would say, babe, I wish we could get that. Babe, I wish we could get that. And then to just
open
the box.
You opened the box and I didn't really catch it when she opened the box.
I was
because it was taped to canisters of the pilot film. Yeah. I really didn't catch it. She's having a meltdown. And then that's when I saw it and, you know. Yeah, the swear words were flowing out of my mouth. I couldn't believe it, you know?
I can imagine.
That was definitely my favorite. What's your favorite?
My favorite?
So much stuff.
There's so much, you know? Every bit of it. I think when he was emailing us and when he said that he still had his original laptop that he wrote the pilot on, I don't know. That just, to me, that is a huge connection. The pilot episode and Chris. That is that just made a connection.
Well, it's such
me.
A personal donation. Yes. Like, that's not just like, oh, here's this prop from the show. It's like, here, take what I used to pour out my soul and create this thing that started a legacy. Right. Like, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. That would have to probably be my absolute favorite thing.
Is there anything like really weird that you haven't shared with anyone that you can tell us about on the podcast?
Oh, weird. I don't know. Probably. I just can't remember half the time. In my memory, I can't. I mean, some of the stuff that we've posted and that we shared with fans, that's probably only half of the stuff. Mm-hmm. We haven't, you know, I mean, there's still stuff that I haven't even posted, you know.
And you want to save some mysteries because you want people to come to the well, we don't want to call it a museum. What are you going to call it? Just a collection? Like
we're
going to
call it a museum.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a museum, but you know, it's going to be like an expo, you know.
Right.
I mean, we're going to involve some other people and some other, you know, collectors and, you know, in different, you know, genres and stuff like that, the horror field. You know, I mean, it's just not, you're not going to walk in and like, okay, there's a, you know,
there's going to be that, but then there's going to be more,
you know, and I want people to have, you know, an experience, you know, they're going to be able to play the X-File pinball game. You know, they're going to be able to, they're going to be able to play the, you know, the Sony PlayStation games, you know, and we do plan on building inside, you know, a movie theater so people can watch.
I was going to ask, you could just be having like the classics playing or something. Yeah.
We plan on doing all that, you know, that's a definite.
That's fantastic. I love it. I love the idea of calling it an experience. It reminds me of like an exhibit they had for Doctor Who, and they just called it the Doctor Who Experience. I'm kind of imagining this as like the X-Files experience, because that's what it would be.
Yeah,
that's kind of like, you know, more of a hands-on and a fun experience, you know?
Yeah.
And we're going to, you know, I'm thinking in my head a lot of surprises that, you know, everybody will find out down the road.
Nice.
Exciting.
So cool.
So do you guys have an idea of, I mean, I know this is hard to pinpoint, but do you have a ballpark estimate of when you want to be open?
When we want to be open?
I want to be open yesterday.
Yeah. Yesterday. When you're shooting for opening.
We're trying our darndest. I mean, we're trying so hard for this summer, you know, I can't guarantee it, you know, but it's going to be this year, you know.
Nice. And tell everybody where it's going to be and some information about it so they can look it up.
Well, it's going to be, we're in Saratoga County.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, for people that are familiar with New York, that's about 3 hours north of the city. Mm-hmm.
40 minutes about from Albany, New York, the capital.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jen, did you have anything else to ask about the collection itself?
I'm just like so amazed by all the amazing stuff. That and the time that it must take to look after all this. Like, you both have 9-to-5 jobs, but this must take up a lot of your life.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It's literally, I mean, I know for her, she does a lot of the, you know, she does a lot of the computer work, you know, and, but it's basically, it's almost 24/7. It is. Mm-hmm. Even at our other jobs, you know. Yeah. You know, our real jobs, you know.
Like, I checked my email.
I'm still doing stuff. I'm still trying to, you know, do business with this and, you know, and contacts and all that, you know, and trying to schedule different interview meetings and all that. It does not stop. I'll wake up at 2:00 in the morning and checking stuff, you know. Yeah. It doesn't stop.
Yeah. Well, it's the only kind of thing that you do if you're passionate about it, to spend that much time and energy on.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to do it, you might as well jump in with both feet and just go.
Yeah. Where is all this stuff right now? I'm trying to imagine. You must have an endless number of storage units or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have, I mean, we have some stuff, you know, here where we live, some stuff. And yeah, we do have a warehouse, you know, that it's getting a little bit too full. We got to think of something else now. You know, I mean, wardrobe alone, we've got, I don't know, 250 plus pieces of wardrobe.
What are your favorite wardrobe pieces that you've had?
Mine, see,
you
for
don't,
me, it's so easy.
You don't like wardrobe.
For me, it's easy. Mine is from the Wear Monster episode, the outfit that, you know, pays homage to Kolchak.
Right. Reese Darby wore it. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're very much like me. You're like, I know exactly what it is. I'm going to go straight to it. And he's like, I don't know. There's so many. You got to pick one,
Jim.
Me, you know, I'm kind of a letdown. I'm more of, you know, maybe, you know, like a supporting actor, you know. I don't know. Yeah. For example, like, I don't know, Stoner Dude and Stoner Chick in the Rare Monster, you know. I mean, I'll pick those two. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty boring. I like, you know, who was that one in Founders? Remember season 10, Founders Mutation?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the two politicians that were bickering all the time? Founders. It was Home Again.
Yeah.
It was Home Again.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those two politicians that were bickering all the time? The lady, remember she's got that suit outfit?
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is just loaded with stuff. And the jewelry, I don't know, it's kind of cool. I got a fetish for something like that, I guess.
That's so awesome. I love how
about the wardrobe is it's like layer after layer after layer.
Yes.
And it's like, why do they, Like, why do they need a t-shirt? No one's ever going to see under this blouse, well, under this vest, under this jacket. You know?
Yeah, they wear like, they wear, I mean, what they're wearing is, they wear like four layers. Sometimes I'll even see five layers and they're wearing it. I'm like, why are you wearing all this? You don't even see it.
Yeah. And then I've got to dress the damn mannequins.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a lot of work in itself. But I love the fact that you like the really obscure stuff, because that's all of us, you know, fans, we love the obscure stuff. So I think that makes it really quite exciting. So I think that's great.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, this is so cool. I want to know a little bit more about your guys' tastes on the show. So what are your favorite episodes? If you each have to pick your favorite episode.
My favorite is DPO.
Oh, nice pick.
Interesting. Yeah.
But then I also, like, I would say my top five is, like, DPO, Arcadia, Bad Blood. So a lot of the typical ones, but DPO seems like isn't that commonly a favorite.
That's a deep cut. I like it.
Yeah, I love that.
How about you, Jim?
I kind of go against the grain a lot. You know, you got all the fans that, you know, they have all these episodes that they love, you know, and I'm kind of left field, you know. My favorite episode, I mean, it changes day to day, but my favorite episode really is it's Shapes, you know.
Wow.
That is
not on a lot of top lists, it has to be
said. See, I told you. Another one of my favorite is that Sanguinarium, the plastic surgery one.
And that one's gross. Ooh, gross.
I told you I'm in left field.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I do like that one,
though. You can tell you're real fans. You like the really sort of, you know, offbeat episodes. You're not just going for the obvious that everyone has on their top 10. You're like, you've got your own ideas.
I like Sanguinarium so much that, you know, have you seen J.J. Lindell's, his poster for that episode?
I don't remember his specific one, but his posters are amazing.
I got that tattooed on my leg.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on the sleeve, my whole leg sleeve of the X-Files, but I got that specific episode, you know, because I'm doing like a monster of the week.
Yeah,
on my leg, you know,
and then mythology on the other leg.
that's a thought
that's coming down the road.
That's a thought.
Yeah. Oh my god,
Kelly's,
I love,
like,
that
I don't know.
Kelly's like, we need to talk about this. That's amazing. That's awesome. Though don't go back and listen to our bottom five episode, Jim. You're not going to be happy with us.
Yeah, I think
I've listened to some of your stuff. I've heard some of your stuff, you know.
Neither of us cared for Shapes very much, so.
Yeah, we didn't have great things to say about Shapes. But, I mean, hey, that's what's so great about fandom, is that we all come at it from different angles. We all love different things about the X-Files, but we're all fans.
And everybody can find something to love about something. And that's what, it's so great. It's such a vast array of episodes and different types of episodes. I mean, that's what's so fun about it. Well, I definitely want to ask you guys some lightning round questions about, like, your favorite, we typically ask our guests these questions, but before we get to that, is there anything else you guys would like to share or plug? I mean, we would love to hear more about the collection. Like, is there some pieces that, like, you really, really are excited to show that are just going to blow everybody away that maybe we don't know about yet, or...
Well, there's always more coming.
There's definitely... Let's just say there's definitely more coming. I'm working on some stuff right now. If I can obtain it, you know, you guys are really going to know.
All right. You're going to know. You have been really good at sharing with the fandom, like, a lot of the things that you guys add. I just saw recently there was one. It was, like, just the actual X-Files. Like, that geeks me out, is because it's, like, the actual file from the episode. And then there's, like, all this stuff inside that you can just go through. It reminds me of, have you guys checked out the new Paul Terry's new book, the X-Files archive book, with all of that excess information?
Yes.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that he probably used in his book is maybe stuff you guys now have, which is incredible. Like,
you guys have the real stuff.
That's just fascinating to me. I love that.
Well,
Jen, did you have any more questions before we ask them our lightning round questions here?
I don't think I do. Let's go for the lightning round. I'm excited.
All right. Well, we got your favorite episodes.
Nervous.
You got to do it. You got to do it quickly. All right. It's a gut reaction. Oh, no. No pressure. It's very quick. All right.
Yeah.
And you both can go. So first one, mythology or monster of the week?
That's easy. Monster of the week.
Monster of the week.
Mm-hmm. No, you like the quick responses. Yes. This one's a little harder. Mulder or Scully?
That is a harder one.
No, Mulder.
I mean.
Well,
I love watching the struggle.
I'd say Mulder, but me, I'm in left field. Really, technically, I would say Krycek.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh wow.
I like it. No fair. I love it.
I suppose if I had to pick, I would also pick Mulder.
Okay.
All right.
Love it.
I love the Krycek answer though. That's awesome.
Right. Yes. Last one, and perhaps most important: soulmates or platonic partners.
I would prefer them to be platonic partners.
Oh.
Because the story could keep going on. There would never be any, you know, eventually with relationships, shows seem to, eventually they have to end, right? I mean, that's right. Always happens. And I don't ever want to stop seeing the X-Files. So.
Yeah, exactly. I would say platonic, you know.
Or they can be whatever they want to be, but we don't have to see it. Mm-hmm. So that way the show can keep going. I think the show to keep going.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think that's exactly what they did, is that they were able to sort of keep it sort of the back burner and slightly mysterious and slightly secretive. And the show was able to continue. And I think that's probably one of my favorite things about the way they dealt with the relationship.
They need to build that tension. That was awesome. But then they needed to keep it like that so we could, you know, focus on the stories.
Right. Well, that's a fair answer.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much, you guys. Can you plug your Twitter and all of your social media stuff for people listening?
It's all findable by X-Files Preservation Collection.
Yep. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram,
YouTube, all of it.
The website.
Nice. And is your fundraising campaign still ongoing?
Nope, that's done. That's done.
All right, good. Okay.
All right.
Well, if you ever want to get it going again, I'm sure there'll be lots of folks that would be happy to donate.
I'm sure there are. There would be, especially considering all the restoration work you guys need to continue to do. So,
possibly down the road for a restoration or something like that. But
yeah.
But I just want all the fans to know that, you know, we're doing this because we love the show so much, you know, and, you know, the stars, the guest stars, we're very thankful for them, Chris, you know, and we want to put on, you know, the darn best, you know, event that's always going to be around, you know, so the fans can come and experience different things, you know, because we're always getting new stuff. Everything's always going to be rotated, you know.
Seeing the props, you can see like how things were made and stuff. Like that's one of the things I love best about the props and stuff, is that you're getting to see like the behind the scenes kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, with the X-Files, I mean, you can put it right up there with the Twilight Zone, with Star Trek, with Star Wars, you know, I mean, the fan base, it just gets stronger every year, and it kind of blows my mind.
Yeah,
you know.
The staying power,
we found that
it's
too.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think there will be people coming to your corner of upstate New York just to see your collection, which I think is great on an annual basis, because there'll be new stuff to see every time. I might have to make a trip to that part of the world myself.
Yeah, I was just saying, we're looking forward to coming up and checking it out. And Jen, you and I are going to have to plan that so that we go simultaneously.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, absolutely. We meet very rarely, so this would be a good occasion for it.
I am very excited.
That's great. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the place for all X-File fans to meet.
Yeah.
Yes.
It'll be the new X-Fest. You guys have to start talking the X-Fest into like taking place very close to the museum. And then that would be like a great collaborative event to get everybody out there. It would be so much fun.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thanks again, Jim and Kelly Thornton, for coming
on
and sharing everything with us. Stay in touch and please keep us up to date on everything happening with the museum. And we really look forward to seeing it.
All right.
Absolutely. And thank you.
Of course.
Thank you.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. We will be back with you in a couple weeks. In the meantime, please do tweet at us at XFD Podcast on Twitter. We want to hear anything that you have to say about today's episode or anything X-Files related, really. And we will catch up with you on the next episode of X-Files Diaries.